browse.
You know, I was down in the mall on Saturday. Were you down on Saturday?
No, I was up in San Francisco, and it was a beautiful event.
Oh, and here it was beautiful, too.
Up at the Golden Gate Park, they had this watershed conference with all these poets, Robert Haas. And
oh, really?
Beautiful, amazing variety of poets, Barry Snyder.
Down here, it was a beautiful day, and I mean, there was, of course, a selection of all kinds of beautiful people all over the streets.
Great.
And from many different classes, a lot of young people, you know, people of different races and colors, for once, which is a rare thing in Santa Cruz, I find, except on the boardwalk.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's such a mix, and it's such a live situation that I think that I've always felt this stimulates business. This doesn't drive it away. And, I don't wish to seem unsympathetic to residents. And I think if a resident finds a person is drumming or doing anything obnoxious under their window and they can't sleep or they can't, you know, they have a right to call the police and ask that disturbing the peace statutes be enforced. But to actually start cracking down on drummers, specifically, the way Rotkin is doing, right, sounds to me like part of his general program to go after young people, to go after... I think he goes after homeless and poor people when he passes these downtown ordinances that penalize people for sitting down or for panhandling.
Yeah.
And I just can't support that. In fact, I have to militantly oppose it, and I encourage others to do the same. But what do you think? Should people support Rotkin's Drum Out the Drummers Law, as I call it, or restrictions on drumming? This is coming up tomorrow at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I think restrictions are just a way of life, and that's the modern world, restrictiveness. I think that's why we're having more prisons built. So basically what I think is that there maybe should be a time frame which is more respectful of the hours of the people that live in that housing project especially.
So you do support Rotkin's plan, let's say, to cut back the hours of the drumming.
Yeah, I think it's an important step to show some kind of responsiveness by the city towards the people that actually live there and pay rent.
How many people actually supported your friend's concerns about the drumming, the resident who lives there?
She seemed to get quite a bit of support, and I think she has had contact directly with Mike Rotkin as well.
Any specific numbers for
them? No, I couldn't really give you that, but I know that it's at least six or seven.
Why don't you call her and ask her to call into this show? Tell her that we would like to get a report directly from the residents who are affected, because, I mean, that's certainly a legitimate concern, sleeping
right
at night. I'd like to hear whether she's tried, let's say, calling to the police to say, look, this is too loud for me, or actually just gone out on the streets and said, excuse me, I wonder if you can keep it down, I'm trying to sleep upstairs.
Yeah.
Because drummers are usually a very respectful group, I find. I mean, they move. I mean, I talked to merchants downtown who are otherwise quite bigoted, and I said, I talked to some shoe folks, and they said, you know, we hate Phil Free singing and so forth, but, you know, I asked, what about the drummers? Oh, no, we like the drummers. The drummers are great. And I said, why are they great? Is it because, well, when we ask them to move, they move. And so I wonder if the people in the residence should be actually encouraged to actually talk. I don't wonder. I know they should be encouraged to talk to the drummers directly.
That's true.
You know, people, Scott Kennedy, the master of mediation, who hobbled the Citizens Police Review Board, should be encouraging proposals to use mediation on the streets of Santa Cruz. That's what I think should be happening. There should be more mediation training going on,
well,
and less laws, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what the host should be. I think a host should be mediators and also greeters.
Yes.
And also, you know, sort of like friendly welcomers, like I said, greeters to tourists and other people that may not know where things are. But I don't think they should be, like, undercover agents for the police.
Right, know? The eyes and ears of the police.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. Until we realize that we all belong here together, and we shouldn't be isolating different facets of our lives to different areas of our existence. In other words, when you're downtown, you shouldn't only be downtown to shop, only. That's not the only reason.
Sure, sure.
You know what I'm saying? So basically, all I'm saying is keep up the good work. I like the show.
Well, listen, come to city council meeting if you can tomorrow night. And if you can't, give a call to 429-3550, which is the hotline, and tell the city council, I guess your opinion right now differs from mine. You support that drumming ordinance, but I would suggest that you encourage them to use mediation instead of the drumming ordinance.
All right. Sounds good, Robert.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right.
And our phone lines are open, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, and no sooner do I say that than in comes another call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Bob here.
Oh, Bob LaMonica. Hi, Bob.
That's right, yeah, picking up on the last call. A proposal was made last year, in fact, December 22nd, paperwork was submitted for an initiative ordinance to block off Pacific Avenue to make it into a mall, mm-hmm. a pedestrian mall, and that was blocked by the city attorney for legal reasons, mm-hmm. In that the people cannot create an initiative to block off a street because streets are all literally owned by the state of California and the local governments administer. So what is possible is a advisory proposition on the November ballot, and that's what a group of us are shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mr. Kennedy's Downtown Commons proposal, which came out one day in advance of the Sentinel article for vehicle-free Pacific Avenue,
mm-hmm.
is interesting, but I also see it as a usurpation. I'm beginning to see some of the local politicians as being more interested in being upstage than they are in taking true leadership.
More interested in upstaging? Mm-hmm.
More interested in being upstaged. They're more afraid of being upstaged.
Oh, I gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And of being usurped in their position in setting the agenda for what happens in Santa Cruz than they are of seeing any real change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my opinion about that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But this advisory proposition, what it gets down to ultimately, is all we're asking for is a test of the people's will. And I agree with the last caller. Downtown represents a great deal more than shopping at some of the retail outlets. It's a place where people can congregate and meet and interact. And certainly we have become so barricaded in our homes and in our cars that we need to, I think, create spaces for people to be who they are, and
yeah,
certainly the
definitely.
Middle of town. So the plan's a good one, and it's based on the Boulder, Colorado model. We'd be blocking off 3 out of 5 blocks from Cathcart to the top,
mm-hmm.
to Mission every other block, and there'd be cross traffic in between those 3 blocks. Every other block you could cross Pacific Avenue by car, and it's a good proposal. And I think that when the public is tested on this matter, that I think it would fly. I believe that if this thing makes it to an advisory proposition, which is toothless, by the way, that it would fly. But once again, if it does fly, if there is a majority of people in Santa Cruz that do want this, the city council would be put in a position where they would almost have to, out of public pressure, do something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good idea.
So that's the story. And we had been meeting on this, myself and Bill Lebon and others, Bill Lebon from Peddler's Express, going back to late last year. In fact, this idea came up in the summer, and we began to create the paperwork to do it and make the connections. In fact, with some of the city council people who were quite supportive from the very start, in fact.
Good.
One of the things I want to say, too, is that, you know, it's one thing to support something behind the scenes, and it's quite different to support something up front and
mm-hmm.
in the open. And I've certainly seen this in the Danner issue.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the so-called leaders in this community agree that Art Danner is an abuser of power.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they agree that specifically the incident where the DA directed time cards to be falsified overlapping his election is an incredible impropriety.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them yet will stand up publicly and say so. If that would have happened, even to this day, Mr. Danner would not survive politically.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way the game is played. So people will play duck and cover as long as they can, until there's a bandwagon. Maybe it's the way that it always was. Maybe it's the way that it was with everything, with Rosa Parks refusing to move to the back of the bus. And it wasn't until after a long struggle that the entrenched leadership finally came forward and mm-hmm. said, this is wrong.
Well, yeah, the other thing that I guess I wanted to mention was that you you called earlier and you pointed out that actually Robbie Berlin, the man who's now faces was sentenced to 6 months in jail, actually only faced 45 days if he would abandon his right to claim a necessity defense, but instead he did attempt to do that. Kelsey, you know, slapped him down. Ed Fry was defeated on that one, and I guess he went with attorney Ben Rice to the sentencing hearing, and he got 6 months.
Right.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Just a kind of an update correction for those who are interested. And anything more, Bob, before I...
Well, one other thing about Danner. And as things kind of unfold, I think that 96 in Santa Cruz, certainly if the new political energy wants to, it can move from turbulent solidarity to solidarity. But in regards to Mr. Danner, Danner has till December 31st of 1998 for his fifth term, and as a minimum, there will be the paperwork submitted for a perpetual recall. It's pretty easy. What was done, this is the second or third, depending on how you want to count, recall that we're in the midst of right now, and there's not much activity happening on it,
mm-hmm.
really. What was done in March was done to get as much stimulation in the political dialogue that could be done, but the nature of suppression being what it is that these issues are not dealt with until the community leadership wants to deal with them. This is what I've been learning, and I think all of us have been learning to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But there can be recall until the guy is out of office, and I think as a minimum, that's the reality. And maybe at some point in time, the posturing people in the community will rise to the occasion. But certainly between now and December 31st, 1998, it's a very simple process to launch a recall. And Mr. Danner, who, if there ever was a public official that should be recalled, he fits the bill, will be facing perpetual recall as a very minimum.
All right.
It's my hope that at some point in time people will rise to the occasion, but we'll see. It's important to keep that pressure on. And
thank you,
it's important to get the message across, because
yes,
the blatant truth of abuse of power needs to be communicated, or we have to admit that our idealism is a complete and utter fraud.
All right. Well, listen, thank you.
One last thing, can I say?
Mm-hmm.
We have a thing called the Pledge of Allegiance, and before city council meetings and before Board of Supervisors meetings, you're requested to stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag. I'm going to ask, and I'm going to certainly do it myself, to remain seated during the Pledge of Allegiance, because this community has no right to be in solidarity with the Pledge of Allegiance. If this community cannot recognize and respond to abuse of power when it's blatantly in its face, it has no right to the claim of liberty and justice for all. The only flag that I'm aware of in Santa Cruz County that's worthy of being saluted and pledged to is the one at the front of the City Hall where the sleep-out demonstration is.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
All right, Bob.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I'm always doing something else when they're doing the Pledge of Allegiance at the city council meetings, and if I'm seated, I don't get up. I think that such posturing by the city council, which has had no interest in liberty and justice for of the most elementary kind for homeless people for the last decade that I have been active, it's a form of hypocrisy, and it's kind of a satirical gesture to engage in a Pledge of Allegiance. Speaking of which, here's another Phil Oakes song from the early 60s about James Meredith, who I guess was the first black admitted to the University of Mississippi. Phil sings it very well.
I'll sing you a song about a southern town where the devil had his rule, when marshals faced an angry mob to send one man to school. His name was Jimmy Meredith, and the tide he helped to turn, for he chose to stay that terrible day the land was soon to learn. There was blood, red blood on their hands, yellow dirt on their clothes. What they thought they were doing, only God and the devil knows. There was hate, cold hate in their hearts, shot from their souls like a gun. And as they threw their stones and bricks, they screamed, "See what you have done." The governor made a promise he would keep the trouble down, but when the mob got ugly, no troopers could be found. And men were filled with hate and fear, they screamed into the night. The rebel flag waved in the air, the symbol of state's rights. There was blood, red blood on their hands, yellow dirt on their clothes. What they thought they were doing, only God and the devil knows. There was hate, cold hate in their hearts, shot from their souls like a gun. And as they threw their stones and bricks, they screamed, "See what you have done." Gas was fired into the mob after each attack, and though the gas was running low, they never fired back. And when the smoke had cleared away and the fury felt its pain, two men were dead and 100 bled, the South had risen again. So listen, Mr. Barnett and Mr. Walker too, the times are changing mighty fast, they'll roll right over you. But someday you'll head farther south to the southern tip of hell, and it's hot down there, white hot down there, let's hear your rebel yell. There was blood, red blood on their hands, yellow dirt on their clothes. What they thought they were doing, Only God and the devil knows. There was hate, cold hate in their hearts, shot from their souls like a gun. And as they threw their stones and bricks, they screamed, "See what you have done. See what you have done."
And we're on the phone now with Skidmark's Bob Duran. Hi, Skidmark.
Hi.
And Bob, you got to the radio meeting on Saturday, but then you got real sick and came on back, and now you're facing some sort of court appearance?
Oh, yeah. Well, tomorrow I go for camping.
Camping?
Yeah, Judge Barton's court.
Oh, this was the incident where you and Sean were arrested?
Yeah, where I refused to sign a citation.
So you're one of the 70-odd people who were taken to, well, not taken to jail, cited. More than 70 tickets now, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, there were 5 tickets given last night by, let's see, Robert Flory was telling me. He got one, Sandy got one, Patrick,
mm-hmm.
and, oh God, I can't remember.
Jimmy Riley.
Jimmy got one.
And there was a fellow named Louis, or Louise.
One other person
got
one,
a ticket.
Probably him.
Yeah.
But they all got them last night.
And their blankets were all taken, too.
They were taken. Sergeant, what the hell is his name? Clark?
Yep.
And Robert Flory says, why are you taking the blankets if you're taking pictures? I guess they're taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you have a perfectly good picture of that, and you don't need to take the blankets. Why are you taking the blankets? And his words to Robert Flory was, because I can.
Hey, that sounds like your song.
One of Phil's songs.
Yes.
Actually, an agriculture song.
That's a, why do dogs lick their balls? Because they can.
Because they can.
Why do cops crack your head? Because they can.
Speaking of that, the other night I was arrested for 415 disturbing the peace.
Wow, when was this?
Let's see, Good Friday.
Oh, boy.
I was celebrating Good Friday out on the mall.
What were you doing?
Playing music and playing across from Alibaba's Cafe.
Uh-oh.
Was the one who charged me.
Oh, God.
Officer Perry goes over and talks to him, and then Officer Black, I don't know if you know him, he's a new one on the mall.
I do.
He came up to me and said that I was being loud and I should keep it down, and so I said, yeah, whatever, and I continued to what I was doing, and then Officer Perry comes up to me and wants me to sign the citation, or actually wanted my ID. First, he said, Mr. Duran, can I have your ID? It's like, wait a minute, you know my name, you know me, why do you need my ID for?
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped, I gave my ID, and then I kept playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started pushing it a little bit by playing.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I figured he'd be busy there to fill out the citation, you know? He'd
mm-hmm.
be using my ID and this and that. And so I went into another verse, it was Drug War Casualty was the song, and that was a little too much. And then he whistled, you know, whoosh, whoosh. I had my tape recorder on. I played it last night on my show.
Mm-hmm.
Then him and Officer Black grabbed me and took me.
Grabbed you?
Grabbed me.
This sounds like a first, Bob. I haven't heard of anybody actually being grabbed and spirited away in the middle of a song.
Yeah, in the middle of a song.
This is a first. This is a first.
Well, I think it's a combination of me not stopping and
did he demand you stop?
No, he just whistled at me. I gave my ID. I figured he was busy there filling out the ticket because, you know, I've had cops fill out tickets around me before, and it takes them a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept playing. You know, I got to make money to pay these tickets off, right?
Right,
so
right.
Here I am playing music more and talking about the drug war, and then they came over and grabbed me and took me to jail. And actually, the police officer was going to take my tape recorder, but I told him it was my evidence and it belongs to me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay, just show me how to turn the damn thing off.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to show him how to turn it off. And then he put it with me, booked me as Officer Black. He was pretty civil to me.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of nice. And he said, I just got halfway through your article in the Metro before I had to come over and arrest you.
That's right. You were in the Santa Cruz Metro last week on an article about street musicians.
Yeah, Phil Free and I, and then another guy, Bob Brosdittman, who's actually been arrested for having too many people watch him play,
mm-hmm.
block the street and block the sidewalk or something, because he's a really exceptionally good musician.
Mm-hmm.
We just get hauled away because we're making a political point is all. And I guess Alibaba was the complaint. They wouldn't tell me, but they were talking to him for an awful long time.
Well, I'll go over and interview him later and see what he says.
Yeah, that'd be good. And then
apparently you were interfering with his elevator music.
Yes, I was. His blasting radio that he has every night, or his street musicians he puts out. And
They out there playing music and blocking the sidewalk, no doubt. I've seen them block the sidewalk. I've seen police officers stand and watch the music. It's great music. But they indeed, you know, they're causing this loud, and it could be deemed an unreasonable sound, just like my music.
When is your court date?
The 26th of this month.
And what are you charged with?
415.2, disturbing the peace, being a loud and unreasonable noise.
What time was this arrest?
About 8:30
p.m.?
Yeah, Good Friday on Friday.
That was on April 5th, I guess.
Yeah. Held me for about 3 hours and then kicked me loose.
Wow. I hope you didn't get sick in jail. That sounds like you might have.
I don't know. I just got this stomach thing happening, but I didn't eat any food in there. They usually kick you out before they have to feed you, although I was very hungry in there, but oh well.
Well, is this going to stop you? Are you going to no longer be playing those songs? Nick,
well,
I'm going to
go pick up my guitar today at the police station.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have it in police custody.
They haven't seized it as evidence?
No, it says on my arrest report it's seized as safekeeping.
Uh-oh, watch out.
Yeah, but when I get there, I'll see what happens.
Well, I think you should bring your guitar to city council tomorrow night and play them a song, which indicates that, let them know what their police are arresting people for. Or at least come today to the police review board at 5 o'clock and play them the song that you were arrested for. Yeah.
Well, I don't have any qualms against how the officers handled themselves. I thought they're quite nice. Actually, Perry was, you know, allowing me to play. I was on my knees, by the way, praying because it was Good Friday.
Oh, so you're also engaged in religious behavior.
Oh, I guess you could say that, couldn't you?
Yes, you could.
Yeah, yeah. Singing about the drug war.
Well, you may think that they handled you in a polite manner, but taking someone to jail is not a polite thing, and they didn't have to take you to jail. They could have cited you and released you, or they could have told Alibaba he could take it up in court.
Yeah.
Civilly, or that he could go to the DA and try to get the DA to file a charge, but no, they chose to arrest you. So I don't regard them as polite at all, and I think you should file a complaint about it, claiming that this is an example of discrimination against your right to be to promulgate a basic freedom of speech message.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's really important coming at a time when Mike Rutkin is cracking down on drumming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's I don't know what that is, a whole drumming thing. I think it's like from 8 a.m. they just want to stop people, stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's masquerading as a help the poor older residents of the, well, I don't know if it's the Palomar, it's the place across from the, you know, Friendship Corner at Calf Garden Pacific, but
well,
I think there's got to be other ways and more laws.
What business do they have putting a retirement home across between Palookaville and the Catalyst, the most noisiest places, plus Pizza My Ass down there that has people out there all, you know, till like 12 o'clock at night. Drunk people usually that come from the Catalyst or the Palookaville or wherever, the Red Room, what have you, and hanging out there and making all this noise, and they're like trying to put it out on drummers.
Yeah, but Bob, they're professional drunks. They're not these amateur drunks who don't know how to play drums.
Well, I've been asked to stop. I played in front of Logos once with my guitar, mm-hmm. and a woman came down, old woman who lived across the street, and she says, you know, I can't get any sleep. I can hear you all the way in my thing. And I said, okay, I won't play here anymore. And I didn't. I don't play there, right there in front of Logos, where it's right directly across from the El Centro.
I think you should come tomorrow and talk about that during the drummers' session and say that it seems to me the real problem is lack of communication between the people on the streets and the people upstairs.
That's what it is. It's like these people who have the problem can't go to the people who are making the so-called problem and talk to them about what's going on, about maybe you're, you know, keeping them awake. If you just talk to them nicely, you know, maybe they would stop, you know, rather than calling the police, these people with guns and mace, and then they have to come
pepper
get involved.
Gas.
And that always aggravates the situation. Mm-hmm. And then, according to the law, if that doesn't work, then they just haul you away. Or is like Phil Free watched Officer Perry and what's that guy's name? The short guy, we call him Stubbs.
Don't know.
Anyway, Kruger or Pruger.
Oh, Pruger, yes, Officer Pruger.
They came.
Pretty boy Pruger, we call him.
This is about 4 or 5 months ago. They came down. These people were playing drums on Hippie Corner, and they came and grabbed the drums, put them in their police car, and Phil asked them why they're taking the drums. And he says, well, so they don't further their criminal activity. This is, you know, to thwart them from the criminal activity. So they stole their drums in order to do that. What?
Hmm. Sounds like you have another voice is pleading. So at 8:15 and on the 26th of April is your arraignment.
Yeah.
Which we presume these charges will be dropped, but who knows? Maybe not. You've been in trouble with Alibaba. Actually, Phil was in trouble with Alibaba in the past.
I've never been in trouble.
And you've never been in trouble with Ali, but I will have to.
He's had the police stop me before and had the host come after me before.
But what about the hosts? Are they still carrying pepper gas around, some of them?
Supposedly they are. I never knew they were, and that was never in the little downtown connection folder that Sergeant Rick Seeley wrote up for seeing how great they were and what a comfort they were to have on the mall. Didn't mention that part about them having pepper gas in their
pocket. We have Sergeant Seeley, the funeral buster-upper, back on the mall again. You know how he raided the home of the woman whose husband died of AIDS and demanded to know where the cocaine was and started taking photos of the corpse and all this sort of thing. We've mentioned that occasionally, but I continue to mention it because I think Sergeant Seeley presents such a friendly exterior to those who don't really know the kinds of things he does in terms of rousting people in wee hours of the morning at the City Hall and so forth, and they really should know the other activities that he's engaged in.
A lot of these sergeants are a little out of control. Crane comes across as Mr. Good Cop and then turns around and, you know, totally does something illegal, like citing someone for camping in the middle of the day.
He's done that repeatedly, and not only has he done that, but he has declared he will continue to do that. It's a policy of his.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you have a blanket and you cover up in the middle of the day, he can regard that as being part of a campsite.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's incredible. The misuse of the ordinances to punish political protest and to just press on with officer discretion. So again, I would encourage you, just like I encouraged the last caller, to come down at 5 o'clock to the Police Review Board and talk about police abuse, because this is police abuse.
Yeah.
And to come down to the City Hall at 7 o'clock tomorrow
night. I'll definitely be there.
And talk about the drummers. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, my son's trying to steal the phone away from me.
Well, then don't allow him to do that. I'm calling CPS right now.
Hey, he did his first shoplifting the other day. He got a carrot from some store.
He shoplifted a carrot. Well,
oh, is this on the air?
It certainly is.
Okay, you're busted now.
All right, we'll call Officer Over. Actually, we're about to play an interview with you when you were talking about Officer Over, and I think we may do that right now.
Okay, well, I'm going to see you later, Bob.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you, Skidmark.
That was Skidmark Bob. This is Bathrobes Pierre Robert, and here we are at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, and the call-in number here, and I know all you folks are just eager to call in now the line is open, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's how you remember it. Lots of tapes here, lots of stuff to get into. I did promise you we have a brief bit from the same person who just called in, Copwatch Bob, talking about another incident on the mall. And I think these incidents are important because they point out a pattern of harassment that's going on, a pattern of gentrification that's going on. And so it's not simply the innocent attempt to protect the rights of older people who live on the mall, which is a completely legitimate concern. Rather, it's an attempt to disregard the rights of one group and use the rights of another to further the rights of a third, merchants. That's the real interest in removing people from the mall who the merchants don't want downtown. That's how I see it. This is how Bob saw it about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, you had a conversation with Officer Ober?
Well, actually, he contacted me and told me that I was... Well, first of all, I saw him pull over and write a bunch of homeless people drinking tickets.
When was this?
This was about 45 minutes ago, down in front of Pizza My Heart, or Pizza My Ass is what I like to call it.
I see.
And I was playing in the graphics building right there, and I was playing a couple of loud numbers, you know.
Right.
I do sing a few loud songs every now and then. So I sang for a few more songs, and then Officer Over came by, pulled his car up, and comes walking over to me and tell
over
me that...
Over came over,
yeah. I was wondering if his first name's Ben or something, but it's M. Over. Anyway, he told me that he was contacting me. I'm contacting you to let you know that you are, or that someone is being disturbed. And then I said, oh, okay. Well, thanks anyway. You know, you can go now. And he seemed very angry, and he walked over his car all pissed. And then I went into, I think I was singing Mayor's Lawn, you know, in dedication to people camping out here. So I started singing Mayor's Lawn. That's a Phil Free song, by the way. So anyway, he comes back over, and he starts telling me, do you think it's okay for old people to listen? Because is an old person pressing a complaint, or is it Alibaba across the street? Because Alibaba, as soon as I set up and started singing, he was pissed because I was a little louder than his music that he has blasting out of his little shop there all the time that you're forced to listen to all day, 8 hours a day. Yeah, while you're going to the Versateller, spend your money, come to Alibaba's, happens to be right there by the Versateller. Isn't that convenient?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think he's the one that lodged the complaint. I'm going to ask him later and see if he was the one that lodged the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Then Officer Ober would be a liar.
Officer Ober a liar. Now you better watch your tone.
And he said it was old people. And old people are way over near the Cat and Canary. So, and I've made myself, I will not play in front of logos because I had a conversation with a woman who told me that I was keeping her up, and I refuse to play there anymore. Even Phil wants me to play there, but you know, maybe once a blue moon I play there. But Officer Ober was, and then he left, and then he left with his lights on and everything. I don't know if I angered him and he took off and he had to turn his lights on and go beat somebody somewhere or something.
I see.
But Phil Free's going to do an expose on Officer Ober. We're collecting all sorts of material from the streets that we have acquired through
the street view of Officer Ober.
Yes.
Ober.
You'll hear it on Phil's show probably on Monday or Tuesday night.
Uh-huh. Now, you know, well, I should give you a briefing on what's happened here. I just got here.
And that was the ubiquitous Copwatch Bob. Again, looks like an incident involving Alibaba, who I like, actually, as a human being, but unfortunately I can't stand his decisions about using police to try to shut up musicians that are near him. That one rubs me the wrong way. If it rubs you the wrong way, show up at Police Review Board tonight at 5 at City Hall, 809 Center Street. If you can't show up and you want to file a complaint or talk to the Police Review Board, you can give them a call at 429-3262. That's the right number. Let me double-check that. And tonight, of course, it's happening. And you can actually show up in person. They have a once-a-month meeting, and it's 429-3262, Monday through Thursday, from 9 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You can call or go into their office at 905 Cedar Street, which is about a block away from City Hall, conveniently located for those who are getting harassed by the police every night down at the City Hall for upholding the right to sleep at night. I think my time is getting short. At least I have to shoot for noon here, and if our show ends at noon, I want to be able to get in some information, and this is the information I'm going to work on next. It's a letter from John Malkin to the Citizens Police Review Board members, dated March 29th, 1996. It's his resignation letter. And John Malkin, as you may or may not know, the Celia Scott, Councilwoman Celia Scott's appointment to the Citizen Police Review Board, which is the fig leaf body that occasionally squeaks at the police, but you can hardly hear them. And most of the time, they are spent in elaborate procedural activity, or that's been their story for the last year and a half. They're also... John Malkin is also the an active member on the Citizens Coalition for a Citizens Police Review, the broad-based community group that helped to establish the Citizens Police Review Board, spearheaded by Margaret Marr, Ben Rice, and other attorneys who did good work putting together proposals for a police review board, which unfortunately were not really followed by the City Council. Instead, we have a much weakened board. They erred, of course, in excluding radicals like myself and really set up a permanent split in the community with some of us because they've refused to deal with me and those that I associate with frequently because they regard me as a little too radical or too militant or whatever you will. That's another story, one I've gone into often. But let's get back to John Malkin's letter to the Citizens Police Review Board. John resigned, and this is why he resigned. Dear board members, effective today, I am resigning from my position as a member of the Citizens Police Review Board of the City of Santa Cruz. After much reflection and thought, I have decided that I no longer wish to be a member of the board. I strongly disagree with the persistent method of some board members to refrain from inquiring about or making public critical issues because of the possibility of a defensive response from the police department. As a result of this method, some concerns have been dropped or handled so as to draw minimum or no public attention. This is a disservice to the community, the police department, and the integrity of the CPRB, Citizens Police Review Board. One particular case of a concern being handled without public knowledge was when the board drafted a recommendation regarding a complaint investigation during a closed meeting and, contrary to normal procedure, decided that the recommendation not be released to the public. Board members predicted that the police department would be defensive if the CPRB's conclusions were made public, and therefore the recommendation was directed only to the police chief and was never, to my knowledge, made available to the community. In all other cases, recommendations have been made public. This method and philosophy is overly concerned with the police department's perception of concerns and questions raised by the board and not focused enough on the designated role of the board, which is to engage in the objective reviewing of complaint investigations, the developing of policy and procedure recommendations, and the education of the public. I feel that it is not the responsibility of the CPRB to guess how the police department will respond to board concerns and or recommendations and to edit concerns based on such assumptions. It is a disservice to the community and the police department to fail to raise legitimate concerns because they may be met by a defensive police department. It is my understanding that this method is based upon the idea that if the board refrains from raising certain issues publicly, that this will aid in maintaining a positive relationship with the police department, and that in the long run the board's work will have more positive results. I disagree with this ends justifies the means philosophy, and I refuse to continue participating in such a process. I think that openness, access, and accountability for the community must be cultivated now, not at some future time. Part of the job of board members requires that we are assertively and openly critical. Instead, when I have raised issues, some board members have aggressively criticized me for doing so. For example, when I publicly described the SCPD as uncooperative, quote-unquote, because they had refused CPRB requests to review the police department's new complaint procedures, which directly affect the board's work, board members interrupted me and expressed concerns that I was being critical and adversarial. In fact, not even the city council was given an opportunity to review the new procedures which have been implemented. This example of the new complaint procedures is also a good illustration of the state of imbalance between the SCPD, Santa Cruz Police Department, and the CPRB, the Citizens Police Review Board. In my opinion, the police department has at times interacted with the board as if it has the option to cooperate or not cooperate as they decide. A fact that illuminates this imbalance is that the SCPD is given drafts of CPRB documents for review, such as flyers and newsletters, before they are finalized and distributed. Yet the board was only allowed to see the new SCPD complaint procedures after they were implemented. In addition, last year the police chief felt that it was within his authority to make a finding in a complaint before the board even reviewed the investigation of the complaint. Though the CPRB ordinance is not clear on this issue, to have a citizen's perspective included in determining findings in complaint investigations. In addition, a Police Officers Association representative openly and publicly told the board that they were in a, quote, wait-and-see mode, unquote, as far as cooperating with the board. An example of a concern being handled so as to draw less public attention is the way in which the low number of complaints issue was handled. Though the chairperson agreed that the issue required research, she would not add the item to the public meeting agenda. My understanding was she did this primarily so that the issue would not be discussed publicly and therefore would not result in a situation where the police department would respond defensively. Another reason the chairperson gave for her action was that this would help something, the problem of me continuing to be a target of the Police Officers Association, perhaps aggravate or help. It's hard to read this particular copy. Instead of a public discussion of the issue, the chairperson directed the staff person to handle the critical issue. I worked with the staff person for months before a committee was finally formed to deal with this matter. That committee is still looking into questions and concerns resulting from the, quote, low number of complaints issue. Further, the impulse to handle this issue in such a manner has unnecessarily complicated and lengthened the process. Another reason for my resignation is that my work has received no consistent support from board members. Too often, when I have stood up for the rights of citizens and have asked critical questions of the SCPD, I have been accused of being too adversarial or anti-police. Furthermore, the Police Officers Association has been relentless in its attacks on me. The former president of the POA, that's Sergeant Clark, went so far as to threaten me by telling me that I was under an investigation he was conducting and that he had collected information about me that he might release to the public. I have now decided to file a formal complaint regarding this incident, see attached form. Much to my dismay and surprise, the chairperson of the CPRB has aggressively discouraged me from taking any formal or direct action regarding the incident. My understanding is that the chairperson is primarily concerned that a formal response would be, quote, institutionally destructive. The chairperson, by the way, is attorney Kay Bowden. In my opinion, this logic is the opposite of the philosophy behind the existence and purpose of the board, which includes making the filing of complaints more comfortable and accessible for all citizens. This is another example of the persistent method, which is more concerned with the police department's response to criticism than with the actual role of the board. My work is grounded in a respect for the rights of citizens. I believe that police officers should not be the sole investigators of complaints against other police officers. I also believe that citizens should have a trusted and responsible route by which they can give input to and have access to the police department. My experience as a board member of the Citizens Police Review Board is like that of someone who has been working with a group of people to build a house and notices that while some of the workers are building a firm structure of solid wood, others are creating a building of thin straw, and it begins to rain lightly, though nobody is willing to say it's raining, for fear that the clouds will respond to the simple observation with a downpour. I am resigning from the board because I disagree with the methods I've described above, and because I feel that such methods are not compatible with building a foundation of trust and responsibility for the Citizens Police Review Board, the police department, and the community. I am also resigning because I prefer to work with organizations that are based on support, cooperation, integrity, and respect. It saddens me to leave the board with such dissatisfaction. I worked for 4 years to have the board established and have for over a year spent 10 to 20 hours per week working as a volunteer member of the board. I know that my efforts have not been in vain and that my work relating to the board has offered me many lessons, but I am greatly disappointed by the first year of service of our city's police review board. Sincerely, John Malkin. Copies of the letter were sent to Lucille Desjardins, chair of the ACLU of Santa Cruz County, John Crew, the ACLU Police Practices Committee in Northern California, Dick Criley of the ACLU in Monterey County, Carter Wilson, Community Studies Professor, UCSC, Mike Rotkin, Mayor of Santa Cruz, Celia Scott, City Council Member of Santa Cruz, to Dick Wilson, City Manager of Santa Cruz, to Teresa Guerrero Daly, Police Auditor of San Jose, and to Barbara Attard, Investigator of the San Francisco Office of Citizen Complaints. And you've just heard a letter from John Malkin announcing his resignation from the Citizens Police Review Board, which meets this afternoon at 5 o'clock at City Hall. And you can actually stand up and tell the Police Review Board just what you think of their lack of activity, their coziness with the police, their failure to investigate this issue of the low number of complaints when Malkin raised it last summer. Instead, they're still dicking it around. And what's happened since is the police chief, Chief Belcher, has come up with a new policy which kind of rewrites the Constitution on these issues. So he can, he says, well, we've been following this new policy, when in fact they should have been following the old policy to allow every complaint should have been filed as a complaint, not dismissed as an inquiry, not argued down by police officers. And that seems to be what was happening in some of those cases, which Malkin pointed out, and the Police Review Board, instead of taking up the cudgel for the people, took up the cover-up for the police. And that's what they're still doing. And if you want to hear more information about this, hey, you can stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, because I'm about to play an interview with Gary Yamane, which I recorded earlier this morning. Gary Yamane is the staff member of the Citizens Police Review Board, and I've grilled him on occasion. He's been very cooperative in being grilled, and I'm glad of that. He's helped file complaints on occasions, but of course it cannot cover up the basic, fatally flawed nature of the board he's operating on, which I think John Malkin is making reference to in this letter of resignation, or at least he's certainly making some criticisms which I agree with.
I'm on the line with Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board. Hi, Gary.
Hello, Robert.
I'm calling you for a couple of reasons. First, you have a Police Review Board meeting today coming up at 5 o'clock at City Council.
Correct.
Or City Council Chambers, actually. And secondly, last week you had a tracking process committee meeting.
Yes.
At Loudoun Nelson.
Yes.
And I wondered if, for the benefit of our listeners coming up today, coming to the meeting, or perhaps who can't even make the meeting but want to be informed about what's cooking with their local police review process, can you tell us what happened at the Wednesday meeting?
The Complaint Tracking Process Committee was scheduled to meet at 7 o'clock Loudoun Nelson. One member showed up, the other member did not, and one of the members of that committee resigned, so the meeting effectively was canceled.
I see. Who didn't show?
Michael Hernandez got the dates mixed up, so he did not show. Kay Bowden was the only one there. She waited a half hour, and then she left. So
process is stalled.
Process is stalled. They will be presenting a report to the full board this evening on what they've accomplished so far, and that's all I can tell you about that.
Do you have a sense of where they are in that process? Are they midway, all the way, three-quarters of the way?
My understanding is they were pretty much done with going through the review of the police department's general orders and were in the process of drafting their recommendations that they were going to bring to the board for the board to review.
Now, the general orders, as we spoke about them last time, I characterize them as Chief Belcher's attempt to retroactively justify questionable behavior this summer. That's my characterization, of course, in terms of concealing complaints, and then he has a new process for downgrading complaints. And now, I guess there are a number, there have been a number of concerns raised by Kay and, I guess, John Malkin when he was on the board. Rundown. Let's just jump ahead to tonight. What is on the agenda for tonight? Might be of interest to folks looking in.
There are several things. The City Council has appointed an independent legal counsel, so I will be introducing this person to the board. Her name is Ellen Lewis. She's a local attorney. That is a big step forward, I think.
And what issues is he expected to be consulted on?
That I can't tell you. I don't know. This will be the first notification to the board, other than by letter, that this person is available, and I would suspect that the board then would be interested in drafting questions and concerns and address them to her.
Now, when the request was made to the City Council to appoint an independent counsel, did the board give any particular reasons why they wanted this?
I don't recall, to tell you the truth.
The thing that I remember was there was the general concern that the police department is represented by the city attorney, and so that a city attorney is put in a position of what seems to be a conflict of interest.
Right. I think that was an overall concern,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
But there were also some particular issues.
I think there were, but Robert, I really, right now, Monday morning, 9 o'clock, I don't recall exactly what they were.
Haven't had your coffee yet, hey, Gary? We've also been getting complaints from some of the vigilers at the City Hall trying to reform the city's sleeping ban, and I guess they claim that they have been harassed by the police, had their signs stolen, their blankets taken without proper process, and bizarre arrest procedures used on them. Have you been getting a number of complaints from these folks?
Yes. I think four or five have been filed to date. And I just got notification back from the police department that they've received those complaints and they will start their process in investigating them.
Mm-hmm. And I believe you also conferred with me last week and suggested that a meeting with Chief Belcher on, let's say, the issue of the seizure of blankets from demonstrators might be one way to proceed to try to short-circuit what might be a lengthy complaint process.
I would say it would be another way of addressing the issue.
Shortcut, I should say.
Right.
And have you had any success in contacting Mr. Belcher on that
issue? I have left a message for him. I have not had a return call yet.
Mm-hmm. He is in town at the time, you know? Or?
As far as I know, I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm. So you have that agenda of today's 5 o'clock meeting at City Hall before you?
I do.
And what do you see on it?
Well, let's see. I was mentioning the introduction of the independent legal counsel. The board is also going to be receiving a report from the chair on the letter written to the mayor from Eric Larson.
Now, this is a letter that criticized John Malkin at a meeting at the Beach Flats.
Right.
In which John allegedly made some inappropriate comments that disparaged the police chief, but yet when I heard Eric Larson's letter, I saw no specifics from Eric. This time there are some specifics, perhaps?
Well, the board's direction was for the chair to contact other people that were present at the meeting to get their impression of John's presentation. So that is what she did. I believe she contacted three or four other people.
She's going to be reporting on
right.
on how they liked, what John said.
Right, what their impressions were.
Sort of a roundabout way to find out what happened. Usually you go directly to the person who made the statement, John Malkin, or to the person who is criticizing the statement, Eric Larson. Instead, they're going to try to investigate what four other people thought went on.
No. John gave a thorough statement of
what was said,
what he said at the March meeting, and that's what instigated this whole process. I would suspect that if he hadn't brought it up at the meeting, nothing would have happened at all with this. But since he brought it up at the meeting, then the board's direction to Kay was to contact Eric and other people that were involved.
So Eric's letter did not initiate this process. It was John's bringing up Eric's letter?
Correct.
Correct. Interesting. I thought that the letter itself initiated this process.
No.
That's interesting. The
letter was not on the March agenda.
Was it having an impact sub rosa? I mean, was John being criticized for this letter, or did he feel he had to bring it up in order to clear the air?
I think John wanted to bring it up because he felt it was misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted to clarify it and present his side of the story. And that's what started the rest of this.
Was Eric invited to that last meeting, do we know?
No, he wasn't, because the letter had just arrived the Thursday before the scheduled board meeting, so it was not on the agenda.
Will he be coming to this meeting?
I don't think so.
Has he been invited?
I don't believe so, although the Resource Center does get our agendas. Mm-hmm. But that's a good point.
Well, maybe I'll call and invite him.
Okay.
think I'd like to have him come to this meeting. I think that's a very appropriate thing. So there's that matter. What else is on the agenda?
Let's see. Decision on rotating facilitators for CPRB meetings. Discussion of setting goals and objectives for the board. There's the committee reports from the Complaint Tracking Process Committee and from the Outreach Committee. And that's what the agenda is.
And there's a discussion of any complaints, I think.
Oh, yeah. There's a staff notification of new complaints received and complaints ready for review.
How many complaints have been received?
Since the last meeting, there have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 new complaints.
And are these all the City Hall complaints, or are there others?
Majority are City Hall, but there are others.
And, of course, these complaints have been put into the top secret file, or do we get to know what these complaints are about?
They've been put into the top secret file.
You're right. They're in the safe, so nobody can see them but the police department, which, is the agency being complained about.
Unless you happen to be a safe cracker, then you have access.
We could contact some local safe crackers and see what they can do, but I'd hate to ruin a good safe in the CPRB office if the police department made you get a safe to put them in. So what about, in Berkeley, what they usually do at police review board meetings is they review complaints publicly, but that doesn't seem to happen down here in Santa Cruz.
It's a very different process in Berkeley. In Berkeley, mm-hmm. they have a separate complaint form and investigation so that they are not relying on the police department to do the investigation. Therefore, everything that the Berkeley board does is public.
Right, but what seems so strange to me is that the time of the board and the public is taken up in endless process meetings, and the actual substance of concern about police abuse, which is the very reason for this board to be in existence, gets about 3% of the time at most at any of these meetings. And we don't hear the board members talking about complaints and about changes in policy in the police department, which is their reason for being. Do you have any thoughts on that as a professional staff member?
Well, I would say that maybe that's something that you would want to address the board in oral communications, that you would like to see more information about what the board feels their recommendations and their process on reviewing the complaints is and how they make that public, and you know, perhaps you might want to bring that up.
Mm-hmm. As I have, of course, in the past, but my concern, of course, is that the reason for being for the board is to review complaints and to discuss police problems, and when so little time appears to be devoted to any public treatment of this matter, it seems to me that, well, I guess my concern is the same as that of John Malkin, who apparently left a lengthy letter on his resignation, which I'm hoping to pick up from your office before I go on the air today, which is that the board is more concerned with preening the police department, scratching its back, and maintaining an easy flow of communication between them than in actually getting anything done in terms of challenging police abuses, which is the reason the board is supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that is John's opinion, and from my experience with the board's recommendations, that is not the case.
What is the case, then?
Well, I believe the board spends a lot of time. You're looking at the public meetings that the board has, but the board spends a lot of time reviewing complaints also, and those are closed session meetings, and you need to count those hours in when you say, you know, they spend all this time working on procedure. But that's not the case. They also spend a lot of time reviewing complaints.
No, but isn't the point that if the review process is designed to expose and correct police abuses, then indeed that is time well spent. If instead it is designed to justify, whitewash, and provide a fig leaf for the police department while apparently engaging in meaningful behavior, then that time is not merely useless, but in fact counterproductive, because what it does is it serves to buttress the police department and its current policy, whatever they may be, instead of dealing with the abuses that are actually happening.
Uh-huh.
And my point is that if so little public time is being spent to consider those abuses, then all this stuff behind closed doors is really, in its own way, counterproductive. It gives those who don't know what's going on the illusion that something is happening, and it frustrates those who do.
Well, Robert, there's no way that the board can change state law, and the board is constrained to follow those state laws, and they cannot discuss the contents of an internal investigation's file in public.
Well, I think that the board could be spending a lot more time publicly at its meetings, its monthly meetings. It could have biweekly meetings as well if it wanted, talking about needed changes in the police department, soliciting input from the public on these issues. It has done nothing of the kind for the last year and a half during its existence. All it's been doing is, you know, engaging in arcane procedural activity, mostly not necessarily in private. That's the public aspect of it, which exhausts and bores everybody who comes to the meetings. And then if in private you have the substance of the stuff, this is all held behind closed doors. I think that there is a way to make that substance public, at least insofar as recommendations and debates on how things should be done. And I think that could be part of the public meeting process. It has not been, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all very well for you to say, well, Robert, why don't you bring that stuff to the board's attention? You know, it doesn't take a man with a college degree or a nuclear physicist to see that you can proceed along those avenues if you want to, and you don't need the great expertise of Robert Norris to do it. You know, it's a question of having the will and the interest in doing it. And at this point, it seems pretty clear to me that the board has neither. But, hey, perhaps with sufficient public pressure and some new board members, you never can tell what could happen.
Well, it's true. And, I mean, I think that item is kind of on the agenda. The board has set aside 30 minutes to talk about goals and objectives for the board. So that would be a very appropriate time for the board to talk about, well, you know, what do we want to do with our recommendations? How do we want to approach making changes with the police department? So it is on the agenda in a sense. And this is a very wide open topic.
Isn't this a little late? I mean, aren't we talking like a year and a half late? Is there any reason for people to seriously think they should even waste their time talking to this board if after a year it hasn't got a clue on this issue?
Well, I would say, Robert, that things change and priorities change, and the immediate priority for the board when they first came online was to establish the procedures to run the board so that they can physically operate. And that meant hearing procedures, that meant bylaws, those kinds of things were immediate that they needed to do, because those things were not established in the ordinance that established the board, but they were part of that ordinance. They were said, you know, the board will have hearing procedures, but there were no hearing procedures, so they needed to draft those. And those kinds of things take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and I think the chair made it clear that this year, you know, the focus is going to change. That this year, they've finished drafting all the major procedural documents that they needed to do in order for the board to meet the requirements of the ordinance. And now they need to look at, okay, where do we go from here?
Well, I guess what's clear to me is that while certainly what you say is true, I mean, you know, that's no question you need procedures to proceed, unless you're spending at least 50% of your time proceeding at the same time as you're getting your procedures together, people are going to become convinced that what you're really doing is you're getting lost in a nest of procedures.
Sure.
Rather than deal with the substantive issues. And I mean, my impression with the board has been a mixed one. I've been impressed with the fact that they've been willing, under pressure, to open up their subcommittee meetings, which initially they refused to do. They've been willing, under pressure, to allow freer and more extensive use of oral communications and public input at their monthly meeting, which they were willing to do. That they became more accessible to, at least to me, when I tried to engage in input with them. And that your office has generally been extremely cooperative in not merely receiving complaints and assisting people in filing complaints, but also in publicizing literature from those of us who have had a long-standing concern with police abuses. And you have not attempted to censor us. You've made your bulletin board available. And I think that's commendable. Anything you want to say before I run to the next call here?
No, I think you're raising good issues, and I hope to see you at the meeting tonight.
Thanks, Gary.
All right.
And I hope to see all of you at the meeting tonight. That's 5 o'clock Monday tonight, April 8th, at City Hall, 809 Center Street. That's the Citizens Ha Ha Police Review Board, which has its monthly public meeting tonight, minus John Malkin, who has resigned from the board. I just read his resignation letter earlier. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're soon to have a co-host with us, Becky Johnson, who's coming to the studio, and we apparently also have an incoming phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, good morning. I just have a quick comment on this police review thing.
Aha, this sounds like the annoying Al.
Okay, so you're going to be annoyed.
No, I'm not annoyed, actually. Go ahead, Al.
It seems to me that the reason for the police review board is because there's a problem with the police.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
So why not retrain or deal with the police directly? Like, you see what I'm saying?
Not quite, but go ahead.
Well, okay. What you were saying is that the police review board is, you know, so what are we going to need? A board to take, you know, to keep tabs on the police review board, that keeps tabs on the police department.
Oh, I mean, bureaucracy, right? Endless
bureaucracy. Exactly. You know, the way I see it is who controls the police in Santa Cruz? Who's above the police?
The people, we would hope.
The people.
Right.
Okay. Why not the people deal directly dealing with the police? Call for retraining if there are certain areas that the police are abusive in, and I mean, you know, call for a retraining of police in Santa Cruz. In other cities, I have heard that they have to be trained a lot more than here, have to have a lot more schooling. So, you know,
that
deal
may
with
be
the problem directly instead of, you know, setting up all these boards and boards on boards and whatever the heck.
Well, you know, Skidmark Bob,
yeah.
Have you been listening to our show, or have you been listening to our show?
Yes, I have.
You know, he was known as Copwatch Bob before he became Skidmark Bob, and he actually thought that a police review board was kind of counterproductive. What we needed was simply a cop watch operation, not just sort of a small group of professionals who went around watching the police, but just a general citizen awareness of how police were operating, what they were doing, more contact with them, because the police get isolated from the community. You know, they become their own little thin blue line, their own little elite force, unless they are really accountable to the community, unless they are really engaged in some kind of egalitarian interaction with the community.
Right.
So he'd suggested that what we need is broader citizen awareness, and I've always believed that true.
Yeah.
Also, citizen tribunals, you know, that's what I suggested back in 1990.
Oh, sure.
You know, I don't even completely dismiss the idea of a police review board theoretically being effective if they really had some power and they were really motivated to deal with police abuse.
Right, but what it seems like listening is that the police review board has problems now, too.
See? Oh, yeah.
Where's it going to end?
From day one.
It seems to me that it's another top-down issue.
Yep.
That it needs to be dealt with. Okay, anyway, I just...
Another grand falloon, perhaps.
Exactly.
Or anything
else?
It boils
back down to probably the, the two cultures.
How are things at the vigil?
I'm not there right this minute.
Aha, you're taking a break.
I'm at the phone.
You're at the phone. What's happened to the vigil phone? Any sign of that phone coming back in yet?
Nope.
Yeah,
the phone's out, the water's out.
Hey, they're turn.
The lights go out.
Hey, man.
Except when the lights come on.
Ain't no sleeping in the city of Santa Cruz.
Those big flashlights. Anyway.
All right.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And the phone lines are open, 427-3772. Looks like high noon or thereabouts here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. If you want to be on the show, and it is a great show, you know that, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, my twice-weekly show, Mondays and Fridays, here on 96.3, all you got to do is give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll dicker, and we'll put you on the air if you've got anything relevant to say. Hey, I've even had Nazis on this show, so look alive. We got a pretty broad spectrum of people that come on to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. The focus here, of course, is civil rights for the poor, homeless rights, rights of people on the streets, these issues, which often there's too little intelligent conversation and accurate reporting on. You just don't get that much in the media. I mean, instead you get trash like today's column with Lee Kornstrom, which you may note every Monday we get to check out Lee Kornstrom, a perennial anti-homeless advocate, who writes in Section B of the Santa Cruz Mercury News, "Bicycle Thieves Bring Out the Best Citizens." And it's essentially a story about how some people stopped a bicycle thief in downtown, how wonderful that was. And along the way, of course, he takes a few swipes. For instance, he says, "I suspect that not only were all of us doing our civic duties, but all of us are also sick and tired of the crooks and thugs and dope dealers who hang out around downtown Santa Cruz, mingling with the sappy deadheads and pathetic punk wannabes." He doesn't mention the overaged alcoholics who hang out at the San Jose Mercury News, but let's continue. "Yes, those are not all mere leeches lounging out there feeding at the public trough and tossing their garbage and other cigarette butts and letting their dogs crap on the sidewalks and parking lots. There are lots of bad guys there, too. Cops find dope shooting rigs with needles that could well be contaminated with the AIDS virus in many of their pockets and occasionally in the gutter or among the weeds." So, he's sort of hysterical, Lee is, and... who knows? Maybe he needs a good massage. I'm not sure what Lee needs, but we need some wisdom, not some of this hysterical blather which he puts out. Next to it is the article, "Homeless to Decamp, Santa Cruz Poised to Jettison Controversial State Park Plan." And indeed, that, by the way, is what's happening at the 3:30 council session tomorrow, 3:30 p.m., Tuesday, April 9th, at City Hall. And Barb Riverwoman and Sherry Connable's plan look like it's going bye-bye, because the city council has gotten too much flack from bigots in the state park system. And actually, this is a very bad reason to jettison the plan. And in a way, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I was thinking of writing a speech that urged the council to continue the Connable Riverwoman plan, even though I think it's a fig leaf, even though I think it's a pittance. I don't think that they should respond to anti-homeless bigotry. I don't think they should do that unless they have another plan that's better that they're willing to put into place. This isn't even a plan. If they've got something to deal with those 60 people that will be cut out, then fine, stop funding it. But if they don't, then keep funding it, at least so that those 60 people, if the people can find $10 each to go up to the state parks, are willing to put their names down on a list and take risk warrant checks, and are willing to get all the crap they're going to get from this state park bigotry that's being stirred up, they should still have that option. And otherwise, the city should get off its duff and do what it's supposed to do, which is deal with the realities of homelessness in Santa Cruz, find legal places for people to sleep, and open them up. Very simple. There are parks in the city that they can use. There are areas in the city that we have gone over in the open-air shelter subcommittee. Catherine Byers and Celia Scott's Oh No, We Can't Do It, Wah, 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 Kvetching, Notwithstanding. In spite of Scott Kennedy's Let's Put Up a Homeless Person in Every Backyard, which isn't a bad idea, you know. I mean, in terms of calling for people to be more charitable is fine. But, of course, in the meantime, let's not make it illegal for people to sleep at night. And Scott, who claims to oppose the sleeping ban, has offered no proposal around that issue, nor a proposal to open a campground. So we got bad news on the pages of the Mercury News, and what we need to do, I guess, is tell them not to cave in to anti-homeless rhetoric on this issue. It's not that I support this program particularly. It's that I oppose the idea of bigots closing down this program. Now, some people will say to me, hey, you know, in order to produce a revolution, you got to get a revolutionary situation. It gets worse before it gets better, blah, blah, blah. They used that argument in Germany and didn't go too well. That was the communist argument in 1932-33. Vote for the Nazis and bring down the Weimar Republic. Well, they brought down the Weimar Republic, but they didn't bring in the revolution, so it was wasn't such a hot idea. I don't know. It differs from circumstance to circumstance. Maybe my callers can give me some guidance on this issue. And while I'm getting guided, I'm going to play yet another tune from Phil Oakes. It's called No Christmas in Kentucky.
Shoppers shopping on a neon city street. Another Christmas dollar for another Christmas tree. They're satin on the pretty dolls that make the children glow, while a boy is walking ragged in the cold Kentucky snow. No, they don't have Christmas in Kentucky. There's no holly on a West Virginia door, for the tree don't twinkle when you're hungry, and the jingle bells don't jingle when you're poor. There's lots of toys for children when the Christmas time is near, but the present for the miners is a stocking full of fear. In the dark hills of Kentucky, there's one gift that may be found, the coal dust of forgotten days that's lying on the ground. No, they don't have Christmas in Kentucky. There's no holly on a West Virginia door, for the trees don't twinkle when you're hungry, and the jingle bells don't jingle when you're poor. Let's drink a toast to Congress and a toast to Santa Claus, and a toast to all the speeches that bring the loud applause. There's not enough to give, no, there's just not enough to share, so we'll drown the sounds of sorrow with a hearty Christmas cheer. No, they don't have Christmas in Kentucky. There's no holly on a West Virginia door, for the trees don't twinkle when you're hungry, and the jingle bells don't jingle when you're poor. Have a merry, merry Christmas and a happy New Year's Day, for now's a time of plenty, and plenty's here to stay. But if you knew what Christmas was, I think that you would find Christ is spending Christmas in the cold Kentucky mine. No, they don't have Christmas in Kentucky. There's no holly on a West Virginia door, for the trees don't twinkle when you're hungry, and the jingle bells don't jingle when you're poor.
And that was Phil Oakes. No Christmas in Kentucky, from his album A Toast to Those Who Are Gone. Now we're going to try to reach Eric Larson at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Eric is a worker there and a cohort of Scott Kennedy's and a kind of community activist who's been in the media in the last few months around the issue of cleaning up drug dealing in the beach flats and also, I guess, helping out tenants who are feeling harassed by landlords who aren't making necessary repairs or dealing with problems that arise in their apartments in the beach flats. And I've badmouthed Eric in the past. Uh-oh, here's our next talk show host. We're going to quickly try to call him and invite him to the Citizens Police Review Board meeting.
All right.
And we're trying to contact him now.
Research Center.
Yes, we're looking for Eric Larson.
Can I say his calling?
This is Robert.
Okay, hold on. Hello, this is Eric.
Hi, Eric. This is Robert Norse calling from Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, how you doing?
All right. I'm wondering if you're coming to the Citizens Police Review Board today at 5.
I've never been to a police review board meeting.
Oh, well, I know that, you know, your name came up at the last one, and there was some controversy, and I thought I wanted to encourage you to come to this one and speak your piece.
Well, kind of in the middle of the classes at UC Santa Cruz.
Ooh,
so
I gotcha. You know, it's from 5 to 7, so any time during that period, if you can get off.
Well, sorry.
Not a good time for you, huh?
No.
Regarding that note you wrote to the mayor,
mm-hmm.
We're on the radio right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering, we heard that John Malkin had, shall we say, well, we got a kind of a vague description of what he said at the meeting where you were concerned about his comments. I'm wondering if you have any more specific details as to what he said that you felt reflected badly on the police chief.
Well, I don't know if it reflected badly on the police chief, but I would say is that you know, the comments in general seem to say that, you know, well, John basically questioned the right for the police chief to be there and also questioned know, whether a police chief should be handing out his phone number to, you know, encourage people to give him a call if they had problems.
Mm-hmm. So he did this. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So that's, and in the way, you know, John, you know, said it, I don't know, it's very strange.
You felt he was being unduly critical of what you felt was a natural right that the police chief had, or perhaps a positive aspect of the process?
Well, let me just, go back and just, let's go back a little bit, and I'd say that, you know, the presentation that John gave to you, you know, at the meeting was, you know, pretty good, and the interaction with John and police chief, you know, during the meeting was, you know, I think pretty helpful in kind of explaining the whole complaint process, and, you know, that complaint process needs to, you know, stay in place and also be supported. You know, the work of the police department isn't perfect, and, you know, it's good to have, you know, kind of a monitoring
mm-hmm.
Board over the police department.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what Malcolm said after, you know, the meeting and as people are leaving, you know, that's the issue that I've got, you know, and that's why I wrote the letter, because, you know, I think the point that John was trying to get across was that, you know, trying to divide the community or community members from, you know, the police department being involved in the beach area, which I think is counterproductive.
So
if the police department aren't at the table and involved with community activists.
Mm-hmm. So what actually, again, what did he say as people were leaving? Was he speaking to a large group, or how did that happen?
Well, you probably want to talk with the, you know, kind of some other folks that were at the meeting and
Who else was
or
at
even,
the meeting?
Or you may even want to, like, talk with Kay Bowden, I guess, with mm-hmm. the chair of the police department.
Was she there
as
well?
Or police review board, or...
Yeah, she's the chair of the police review board. But was she at that meeting, or...?
No.
But you were in fact, a witness to the comments that were made, and they did concern you enough so that you actually wrote a letter to Mayor
yeah.
Mike Rotkin.
Mm-hmm.
And you, again, what you heard him say was to a smaller group of people who were leaving, or it was to the whole group as they
yeah,
left?
It was as, you know, folks were leaving, yeah.
And he was critical of the fact that Chief Belcher was giving out his number?
Right. He was he didn't appreciate, you know, the chief being there, and he felt, in general, upset that the police chief, you know...
had showed up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the basic thing.
Hmm. Did he say why he felt concerned about that, or...?
I don't really recall. It's just... I'm basically, you know, this isn't my issue, and I'd rather not make a big issue of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, John's been a supporter of the Resource Center and also a supporter of myself, you know, for a while, and we just have, you know, a few disagreements about, you know...
Well, sometimes the best people have disagreements, Eric.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm mentioning it is because it was an issue that, you know, John has resigned from the board. You're aware of that.
Wasn't aware, Yes.
And his letter of resignation, actually, I don't think it really goes into the issue that you had with, the disagreement that you two had on that issue, but he did, it was an issue of some moment at the last meeting, and it was discussed at some length, so I always felt that it's always best to go directly to the people who are involved and, you know, get the word from
them. What I understand, you know, I haven't read the letter, but from what I understand is that, the main problem is with some of the other board members.
That's certainly true.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not...
Oh, I'm not saying... He didn't resign because of you, I don't think. No question about that.
I hope not.
No. I doubt that. And I'm glad that you've put the issue in some perspective, at least as you see it. And I would talk to you more, but I'm being edged out by the next talk show host here. So I want to thank you, Eric.
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And we're on the air in the fading moments of our show here. That was Eric Larson talking about a controversy that arose with former Police Review Board Commissioner John Malkin at a meeting about a month ago. And apparently Eric felt bad, John made comments that were critical of Chief Belcher from Eric's perspective. And John has another perspective on that. I'm hoping we can get John on the air to talk about it. I hope John is as forthcoming as Eric. But that's for another show. And what we have now is a very brief statement from Becky Johnson, who we have in the studio drinking tea. And Becky, you came down here to talk about a few things. What did you come down here to talk about?
Oh, I just wanted to remind your listeners, at least the ones who have television sets to watch tonight, on Channel 71, we're having a showing, the premiere showing of the City Hall Sleepers Protest. It's about a half hour. It'll be on 8 o'clock tonight, 8 to 8:30. As I said, Channel 71 will be rebroadcast later on at various dates, but that's the premiere showing is tonight. And so, please watch.
You had some other things to say, too, didn't you, Becky?
You had a few other things to
say. What else did you say? I don't know what I was prepared to speak about at this point in time. I think that, in general, people have got to be aware that these camping ban laws, which so penalize homeless people, just on their face, to make it illegal for someone to sit or to lean against a building or to sleep, or sleep in their car, or sleep in the open, are just laws which, on their face, should not be. And I'm surprised that they have the public support that they do. I'm surprised that our city council supports them. And I encourage your listeners to call up City Hall and tell them to modify these camping ban laws.
At 429-3550. Becky, earlier today you talked about a letter in the Santa Cruz Sentinel which praised District Attorney Art Danner. Talked about his wonderful domestic violence program. Do you have any comments on that?
Now I see where you're going. Yes, this letter was in the praiseworthy section of the Sentinel, discussed the victim witness program and praised Art Danner profusely for this. This victim witness program was put together by a woman named Judy Osborne, and she was like an 18-year employee of the district attorney's office. she put together this program, and it was a praiseworthy program. It won a governor's award. Art Danner had her demoted to kitchen duty in Watsonville, a job which she had no desk, no computer, no job description. She was simply to show up and spend time every day until finally, after 3 months or so, she quit. The victim witness program fell apart without her direction and support. And for him to be getting for him to be getting praise for this is just a joke.
In other words, can you make an announcement?
You're now on the air.
Oh, this is Morgan.
Yes, Morgan.
I'm calling to say that have you talked about the Tax the Rich postering?
No, I haven't.
Campaign.
We have 1 minute to do it, though.
Okay, well, I'm going to be talking about it in detail at 4 p.m. on my show. I just wanted you to announce that.
Oh,
so
cool.
If anyone wants to know everything you wanted to know about postering for Tax the Rich Day, you can hear it at 4 o'clock on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
You can hear it from Morgan Firestar.
Right.
Thank you, Morgan.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
You're saying goodbye to Bathrobes Pierre Robert. Again, I encourage you to come to the Citizens Police Review Board tonight at 5 o'clock at City Hall. Tomorrow at 3:30, come to City Hall again for the City Council's dispatching of the voucher program. And we should urge them to do something real about the rights of people outdoors. Then at 6 o'clock, tune in to Community Perspectives to hear Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. That's tomorrow, Tuesday at 6 o'clock. You can call in to
425-4920.
425-4920, and you can be on the air on television, at least your voice, my body. 7 o'clock, an hour after that, you can go back to City Hall and fight the Drum Out the Drummers program. And of course, 8 o'clock tonight, you get to hear Becky Johnson's show. You get to see the video on Community Channel 71 or 72?
It's Channel 71.
And that's going to be the City Hall sleepout at 8 o'clock. Next week, or I should say on Friday, you can rejoin me at 10 o'clock at this time. Show up at Taco Bell if you want to be a guest on the air at Laurel and Pacific, or give me a call at 423-4833. We now join our next show in progress.
I'll go ahead and just cue you.
When red bandanas on the streets, and if you're slipping, you'll be 6 feet deep.